Over the past week, there has been an uproar in New York City as the mayor and the NYPD have unfairly cracked down on the Frum community. Yet when others break social distancing guidelines, the cops have smiled and handed out masks. Mayor de Blasio put out a tweet singling out the Jews over a levaya that was approved by his own NYPD. The double standard is outrageous, though sadly it's nothing new. Welcome to the Yeshiva World podcast. My name is Yaakov M. Remember to check out my 24-hour news hotline at 848-261-NEWS, 848-261-6397. I spoke with Councilman Kalman Yeager about the fallout from last week's levaya. We discussed Mayor de Blasio, Commissioner Dermot Shea, and more. I also asked the councilman when shuls and camps should reopen, what his opinion is over the mayor's lockdown restrictions, and much more. Here now is my exclusive interview with Councilman Kalman Yeager. Joining us now on Yeshiva World News, New York City Councilman Kalman Yeager, who represents the 44th District, including a huge chunk of Frum communities in Brooklyn. Councilman Yeager, thank you for being here, for being an amazing representative of our community. We wish the circumstances were a bit different, but we appreciate you joining us.
It's really great to be back, and I appreciate all the nice things you said about me, whether they're true or not.
They are. You've been very active lately on Twitter. You're always active, defending the Frum community, as always, calling out the double standard that we've been seeing by the city. The NYPD, whom I have a ton of respect for, they appear to be cracking down on Jews not keeping the social distancing, and yet non-Jews are breaking the same rules. They're either ignored or the police are handing out masks. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, look, I'm going to start with your point. We are amongst the most pro-cop community in the city, in a city that unfortunately has a lot of communities that are not pro-cop. And it's not just our community that's pro-cop, but its representatives reflect the beliefs of, and values of our community. So myself, my Assemblyman Simcha Eichenstein, Senator Felder, my fellow councilman with whom I share a border, Councilman Chaim Deutsch, we are incredibly strong supportive of cops. In our respective bodies. And in the city council, where nobody ever defends cops, we're the lone voices. So it's actually shocking that the police have been dispatched in this kind of way. And it's not that, again, not blaming the police for this is important because the police are following orders that they're given by the people who run the police department. I do not believe for a second that individual officers wake up in the morning and say, well, it's time to go get the Jews today. But I do believe that after the levaya on Tuesday in Williamsburg, there was a decision made and a concerted effort thereafter to come, I hate to say it this way, after the Jews. It's not just my belief, but the numbers back it up in very real ways. The footage backs it up in very real ways. You see a Yingeman standing on a street in Williamsburg walking by himself. He didn't wear a mask and he's getting a summons. Why? He's not required to wear a mask if he's walking by himself. That's not the rule. The rule is you have to wear a mask if you are unable to be socially distant from one another. He was walking by himself. He was getting a summons. I've heard of dozens of these circumstances where people are getting summonses, and I did not hear that going on anywhere else. I am obviously not online looking at what's going on in Central Park and whatnot over Shabbos, but much of Shabbos today we were seeing incredibly large gatherings of people. And the notion that the mayor gave when he was asked about this by Reuven Borchardt of the Hamodia is that, and the Yeshiva World actually ran a story about it, yeah. Is that the mayor said, well, that's different because those are just individual people who all happen to show up at the same place at the same time versus an organized event. Okay, but the guy walking down the street in Williamsburg was not an organized event. He's just one guy. And there are dozens and dozens of stories like that.
And Yeshiva World, yeah, continue.
No, it's like you said, Gagra. It's incredibly disappointing, and I think that it is a double standard.
And Yeshiva World reported that nearly 100 summonses were given out in Williamsburg the morning after last week's levaya, and it said mayor's executive order, as you say.
Yes, that's correct, and it's an outrage, frankly. And the response to seeing somebody walking down the street by himself without a mask shouldn't be a summons. It should be handing them a mask, frankly. That ought to be the city's response. These are different times. These are difficult times. These are very strange times. And I may not have necessarily thought that the response from the police or that the proper action from the police is hand over a mask, except I saw the police were doing that everywhere else. So I'm just kind of wondering why that wasn't happening in the Jewish community. Why were we getting treated differently?
Now, did the NYPD, as far as you're aware, approve the Levaya last week in Williamsburg? Commissioner Dermache was asked about it, and he said there's a difference between planning and approving, which to me seemed a bit odd. What are your thoughts about that?
Lies, 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 all lies.
Wow.
They delivered barricades. They delivered floodlights. They were involved in the organization of it, approved planning. Look, I'm a lawyer. I know how to take words apart and you know, depending on the use of the syllables and how you flip it around, it can mean something different. But come on, that's not true. They were involved. They were reached out to by the Besmedrish. They could have immediately said no, no, no Levaya, no driving by the shul, no anything on the street, not happening. It goes, the mess goes from the funeral home straight to the Besoilim or to the airport, wherever it was going, and that's it. No stopping off in the neighborhood. They never said that. That's not what they said. They said, well, hold on. How many blocks do you need? Let's get barricades out. Let's get floodlights out. We'll get some cops out. And you know what? People in the neighborhood heard that a gadol was nifter. They see barricades out there. They see floodlights. They see police. It looks like normal times. So what do? Covered a mess. They come out. The average person does not want to disobey. The average person does not want to not comply in a way that would be, as we know, dangerous, that not looking to either infect themselves, infect others, chas v'shalom, to turn the magefa into a longer problem than it is today. But what they saw when they came out was, when they looked out their window, was, okay, there's a Levaya for Gadol. We're going to come out. This is typical. This is what we do in our community. And the notion that Sof Maisa, it was turned into a, well, we were aware of it, but we didn't approve it, but we were notified, but we participated, we didn't plan, what is that? Come on.
Yeah, it was outrageous to me. And then they turned it around. And the other aspect of this is Mayor de Blasio's tweet, where, of course, he singled out the Jewish community, and we all know he never would have said my message to the Black or Hispanic or Asian community. And I know that you're a big fan of the mayor. We appreciate everything he's done, but what are your thoughts about that?
Well, look, I do believe, first of all, it's very clear that language is inappropriate. That's what I said that night. I've been saying it every day since then. I think that the mayor ought to have known better. I will parse this out into separate pieces because I think something must be said. It must absolutely be said. There is some stuff going on in language in our community, you know, the WhatsApp groups, which is apparently, you know, our version of the New York Times. All the news is there. But the reality is it's not right, fair, or accurate to call the mayor an anti-Semite. It isn't. It is fair, right, and accurate to call him and what he said irresponsible. And I'm going to give you a real live example. Approximately a year ago, I tweeted two very absolutely truthful sentences. One, Palestine doesn't exist. Two, Ilhan Omar is an anti-Semite. It's a year later, by the way, 13 months later. Still, both things are true. The mayor was one of the people who said it was an outrage that I said that. I don't know why it was an outrage. We're now in the universe where a member of the legislature of the city can't speak the truth. But okay, I get it. His point was some people might have felt bad, so it would have been better if you didn't say it. Fair enough. What he said was an outrage, and has been pointed out, for example, by Dov Hyken, who tweeted this with a very moving video. It has been pointed out that in the last couple of days, the language on social media about Jews this, Jews this, Jews this. Jews were trending in New York topics on Twitter the day after this topic, the day after the mayor's words. Let me tell you something, okay? It's never good when Jews trend, ever, ever, ever. And it was because of the mayor that it was. That's irresponsible. He had a chance, more than one, more than two, more than three, to tone down the language. And he should have availed himself of it because he is our leader. And whether you like him or not, he's the mayor of New York, and his words and his language do reverberate. So that tweet, you know, the difference between when I tweet and when he tweets. I tweet, I take my, you know, I take my Twitter, I type some words, I hit send, it's gone. Was it the smartest thing to say? Maybe, maybe not. But I'm the one who did it. It's all on me. I get it. When the mayor tweets, the mayor's not picking up, pulling his phone out of his pocket and starting to tweet. There's a dozen people involved in the mayor tweeting. He's not even sending it himself. So this was not a slip of the tongue, so to speak, a poor choice of words in the heat of the moment. This was a thought process. It was done. It was approved by the mayor and his staff, or his staff and not him, or some staff and not others, or whatever the case may be. But it wasn't just the mayor in the heat of the moment saw something that made him crazy and he just went and tweeted. So I think an apology, a clarification is appropriate, and not the way he's done it. And the fact is that even if he had apologized, as we stand here today, that apology would have been empty words, because the acts on Thursday and Friday in Williamsburg proved, and then the acts on Shabbos in other neighborhoods in this city proved, that apology was meaningless, because the truth is in the words that he said. It was the Jewish community that better watch out, not everybody else.
It's a great point. I haven't heard anybody else make that point. That's something I think you and President Trump have in common, that I don't think President Trump has a team of people either strategizing, or he wouldn't send out half of the tweets he does.
But I think that's very fair. And the reality is, I take, you know, when I tweeted and people said, I had this conversation with Speaker of the City Council. He's like, there's somebody else, you know, tweet. Actually, nobody tweets for me. I have my access to my own account. It's only me. The difference, by the way, between me and the president, which is why I can block people and he's not allowed to, is because my staff, my government paid staff, does not tweet for me, doesn't have access to my account, doesn't prepare content for me, and has no control over it. This is my Twitter feed is an account that I created before I ran for office, before I took office. It has my own name. I use it for everything from talking about my family to talking about what I'm eating to talking about public policy to talking about which elected official is an anti-Semite, and to talking about legislation in the city council, which is actually my job. I use it for everything. So that's the difference. You know, the president has converted his personal Twitter feed into an arm of the White House voice machine, whereas mine is just, it's Kalman Yeager saying what he's saying.
Right. And both of your tweets are true, Palestine and Ilhan Omar. Before we
still
move on,
true, even a year later.
Probably be true for a long time. Before we move on to other topics, we should mention that the Frum community, I'm sure you agree, has been phenomenal in terms of social distancing guidelines. There's always going to be an outlier in every community who ignores the rules, sadly, even when it's a matter of life and death. But I'm just amazed, astonished at how wonderful the Frum community has been.
You know, I actually, it's good that you brought that up. Let me tell you why. Yaakov, it's not that just we are compliant to the tune of, you know, unstatistical tune of 99.9%, let's say, or whatever the case may be. But look at how we have complied. Our community, our greatest gedolim, have shut down everything. The biggest bata midrashim, our shuls, our yeshivas, immediately, no questions there, shut them down. The Das Torah that came out, I mean, to me, every time I think of this, what I'm about to tell you, I have tears in my eyes about that. The Nova Minsky Rebbe, just days, a couple of weeks before he was nifta, he put out this moving video begging the community, please pay attention, don't play around with this, it's not a joke, we have to abide, it's mamish life or death. And 2 weeks later, he was nifta, and it's almost as if you can picture, you can imagine the set of facts being that the Nova Minsky Rebbe was showing us exactly how to do it. His Levaya would have had 100, 150,000 people in the
easily
streets of Borough Park. My constituent, he's my constituent, lived in my community, lived in my district, a voter, a neighbor, a member of my community, but the president of the Mieses Gedolei HaTorah, an incredibly kind, decent, wonderful human being. There is nobody who didn't respect him. It wasn't like a different chassidus, this, that. He bridged all.
Right.
And what was his levaya? Listen to it on the phone. Not even going to tell you where it's going to be. That was a message from our highest gedolei HaTorah, the Rosh Yeshiva of Ger, Reb David Olevsky, somebody I knew since I was a child in single digits. He was a giant to me my entire life. Is nifta. What did his levaya consist of? A telephone, not even on Zoom. My cousin's levaya today was on Zoom with over 500 attendees, not a physical place. But you know, the Rosh Yeshiva of Ger had a levaya which was over only on the telephone, and people were told if you want to provide Kavod HaMes in person, and you show up without a car, you're going to have a problem with us. The only people who could go were in a car. You had to stay in the car, and you could drive 10 blocks to accompany the mess outside of Borough Park to the end of Borough Park at 65th Street. It was pre-ordered that you cannot go past 65th Street. Zvi Sadaf says, this is exactly the way it's supposed to be, that those who participated accompanied the Nifter out of the neighborhood where he lived so that he can go into Yerushalayim to be buried. That is what the Gedolim are telling us to do. We have to abide by these examples. We are, as a community, is there a shtick here and there? In every community. But are we the ones who have to get it over the head?
And really great points. And the Frum community, of all communities, everything we do is as a tzibur, shuls, yeshivas, simchas, levayas. Yet we have all confined ourselves, as you said, to our homes for many weeks and months here, which segues me into my next question. In your opinion, when do you think the shuls should reopen?
You know, the governor was asked this question today about a different topic, but it was about when and, you know, fill in the blank. And his answer, and I'm going to give the same answer, I'm not the governor, but the same answer. You tell me when the pandemic is over, I'll tell you when things reopen. But until then, they don't. And that's the reality. Until the governor reopens the state of New York because the scientific data is such that it allows government to make that decision wisely, confidently, and safely, then things are going to be closed, and they have to be, because this is not a joke. I mean, these are, you know, I mentioned before, Leviah that I attended today was my mother's first cousin, a very well-respected doctor, from person from Teaneck. His mother, my great aunt, is now going to tonight. The Nifter was flown to Yerushalayim for burial tonight. My great aunt will sit shiva for the second time in 2 weeks. The first time was 2 weeks ago, right after Yom Tov, for my grandmother, her sister.
Wow.
This is what's going on in our community. The greatest gedolim, there's not a single family that I know of that hasn't been touched by this. You know, I heard a colleague of mine at a hearing in the city council, we're doing hearings over Zoom, mentioned how this week on Thursday, somebody in her family had passed away. It was the 28th person that she knew who had passed away. It's terrible. It's a tragedy. But I hit the number 28 weeks ago. I am well over 100 people that I personally know. I have lost count. I haven't actually kept the list. But if I did, well over 100, maybe more, people from our community, neighbors, friends, immediate family. I'm not saying that people whose name I know, or whose name I read in the newspaper. I am saying people who I personally knew, or I know somebody who's sitting shiva for that person personally. I know people who have sat shiva 2 weeks apart for parents, once for the mother, I know, and then a week later after Yom Tov again for the father. The immense heart-wrenching tragedies that are befalling our community, we're not playing around with this as a community. We are compliant. We are paying attention. But it's important that we actually have to wait until it's lifted, because it doesn't just get lifted. For somebody asked me this question, well, it's over in Borough Park. What do you mean it's over in Borough Park? It's not over. We're not at one place. We don't have a wall around us, where we're all breathing only the air from Borough Park, and it doesn't go anywhere else, and nobody comes in, nobody goes. We're one city. We're all together. We're going to get on what? On the subway. Then what's going to happen? A shutdown has to be a shutdown, has to be a shutdown. And until it's all reopened, it's not.
Absolutely true. And the things you're describing, I mean, it's unspeakable, Rahman al-Itzlan, but you're 100%. I mean, how could people, hopefully they are getting through their heads that, as you say, this is the most serious matter, and it's literally life and death every minute of every day. Another topic which affects so many families, do you have an opinion about whether summer camps and bungalow colonies should be opening this summer in the Catskills?
Again, it's going to be the same answer, but a shorter version of it. The answer is what we have to see what happens in May and June. You know, I was asked last week by a constituent who mentioned that the camp that their children attend had already begun accepting applications, and the mother viewed that as a sign that the camps are going to be reopened. And I answered, and this is very important that listeners be aware of this. I'm sure camps are making it clear, but they ought to pay. They ought to be if they're not. You know, camps have an achrayus right now to take in the applications, because if everything is clean and green and lifted on June 15th, a camp can't start beginning to put together its summer on June 15th. So the camps are responsibly, I believe, planning now in the hopes that, you know, by the last week of June, you know, things will be able to, you know, return to a semblance of normalcy or already have. But the answer is nobody knows right now.
Okay, and I totally understand that, and I agree with everything you're saying. I think some people are wondering what is the end game, in the sense that people are worried that the economy could be in danger of collapsing. Maybe that's a little strong, but something close. And it's not possible to stay locked down until a vaccine is developed, which is not going to be for months. How would you respond to that?
Well, first of all, again, it's a different variation of the same question. The economy staying closed is not good for anybody. It's not good for the economy. Believe me, New York City has a budget that has to be balanced, and it's going to take a huge hit, and it's going to have to take cuts. And that's just a fact of life. It's going to be, and they're going to be painful. It's going to be bloody. But the reality is that at the end of the day, it's about lives. It's about human lives. And a government has to be respectful of that. It has its first obligation. I said this actually in our last broadcast with regard to anti-Semitic attacks. Government's first obligation is public safety.
That's what you said.
And public safety as it relates to a pandemic, that's public safety like anything else. It's whether it's high crime or whether it's a pandemic, the government has to provide for the life, for the security, for the public safety of the people who live in its borders. And until this is over, it's not over.
In general, what is your opinion on the way the health crisis, the lockdown, have been handled by the local government, Mayor de Blasio, putting aside the issue we discussed before, Governor Cuomo, President Trump, and the task force? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think the technical term is there was a fumfering of it. There was, you know, we're going to close bars effective tomorrow, so you better go out tonight and go drinking. You know, the effective tomorrow, there's not going to be any movies, so I'm going to the movies tonight. Or, you know, the beginning, I mean, I last took the subway, I remember the day, was Shushan Purim. It's very clear at this point that a lockdown ought to have been done by then. And San Francisco was already engaged in it very wisely. It's why their death toll numbers relative to their population is tiny compared to ours, because they were responsible from the beginning. And New York was kind of like, you know, whatever, until you get it, you didn't get it. So I think that, I think 2 weeks earlier would have A, saved a lot of lives, and B, I want to say probably would mean that we are on the pathway to reopening. But again, that's not, you know, it's easy to say it. And, you know, I'm a straight shooter. I'm not going to say something that just because it's easy to say, I could say it. I don't know
you're
it
not.
Well enough.
I've noticed that.
No, I'm not. But I do believe, and I'm hopeful that we're on the pathway to recovery, but I think that a 2 week earlier shutdown would have kept a lot of people from being infected, which would in turn have kept a lot of more people from being infected. It's just the nature of this business with the spread. So we're here where we are today. I don't know if looking backwards makes a lot of sense, but there are going to be whole bunches of books written on this topic, whole bunches of books, studying every single tweet of the mayors versus the tweets of the San Francisco mayor on the same day, hours apart, where one was saying we're on a complete shutdown and the other one was saying, I'm going to the movies tonight. I don't know what's wrong with you.
Yeah, and March 15th, while telling people to go to bars.
Yep.
It's a great point. On a totally separate note, has the bail reform law been all but forgotten? I know we're in a current crisis. I get it. But it actually is impacting people. A listener reached out to me, told me about a sibling of his who owns a liquor store. And he literally showed the police, this man repeatedly is shoplifting. This is in Brooklyn, at his liquor store. He's showing them surveillance video. And the police said to him, listen, we'd love to arrest him. He's going to be out of jail tonight and without any bail. So we're not even going to bother.
That's not an appropriate response. That's not an appropriate response. And, you know, it's like the TV series Law and Order. There's two different branches of government, the police who investigate the crimes and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. The police have a job. And if a crime is made, a crime is made. It's not the police's job to worry about whether or not it's worth it because the punishment is not going to be there, so not bothering. No. The police's job is to take the guy off the streets. And you know what? They can't take him off the streets for a year, but they only took him off the streets overnight. So that's the job. And if that's the case, then dayenu. That's life. we'll have to deal with that. But for not responding, that's just lazy policing. I'm sorry. That's number one. Once again, Yaakov, I said something that may get me in trouble, but it's true. Can't just say I'm not going to do it because it's not going to be worth it. That's not your job.
That's a fair point.
Nobody in their job. You know, if somebody walks up to a bank teller and wants to put a dollar in their account, the bank teller doesn't get to say, you know, for a dollar to put into your account, it's not worth it for the bank to take this deposit. That's not the way it works. You take the deposit. That's your job. It's the same thing with the police. Now, in terms of bail reform, in Albany, right around when the pandemic was breaking, Albany passed a budget. They made some tinkers at the fringes of the bail reform law to make it less stupid, let's say. In my judgment, I don't think enough was done. But right now, because I don't think we can actually look at numbers and compare and see, because I think the pandemic has actually warped a lot of the scientific data. I think what we were seeing in January was a good place to look, that there were people out there who were committing crimes. There were people out there who were saying, you know, feel free to come arrest me. I don't care. I'm going to be out of 5 minutes. I mean, I tweeted about this. There was a guy who said, oh, yeah, I get arrested every day now. It's not a problem. I got 47 times, 100 times, whatever. But on the flip side, this is just one part of a criminal justice conversation. There's another. The New York City Riker system released a whole bunch of people allegedly on the COVID fear of, you know, it's spreading in the jails, which is actually a very significant fear. But on the other hand, one of the people who was being held was arrested several days after his release. And so, look, I think that every politician responsible for that person's release should have to line up in front of the victim so that the victim could spit at them. This is poor government. I serve with a lot of people who are advocating for the release of criminals, but you know, my point is that you don't just look at what's going on now. If you want to know whether or not their position is true and real and actually based on reality, you have to look at, were they 6 months ago also advocating for the release of prisoners and criminals? And if so, who cares what they say now? But there's a whole environment, a whole economic portfolio of elected officials who make it their business to advocate for the criminals instead of advocating for the taxpayers of New York. And I think that's very dangerous. So going back to your original question, bail reform is not done yet, but we're not in a place that we can see how bad it is right now.
Councilman Yeager, as always, we appreciate your candor, your clarity, your values, and your leadership. I know you brush off my compliments, you know, and then you're that humble type of person. I'm not exaggerating. Having you out there, to me, is a tremendous source of security and peace of mind and confidence. You're also really great on the radio.
Well, you know, you make it easy for me. Okay, if I have a couple of seconds, people are going to turn off at some point if they're not having fun.
That's
but I want to take a very serious note for a moment. And there were times in this that we had fun. There were times in this that we were serious. But this is something that's important to be said because he deserved it. My predecessor, Councilman Noach Dir, Judge Noach Dir, Justice Noach Dir, District Manager Noach Dir, District Leader Noach Dir. I don't know if I left off any titles. Band Leader Noach Dir from when he was a youngster and a friend of my father's. Noach Dir was a legend. I don't use that phrase to talk about people for no reason. He was somebody I knew since I was a little kid. He was a good, decent person. And, you know, look, when I was a kid, there were two names that anybody in the firm world knew as our representatives. Noach Dir, Dov Hyken.
Yeah, exactly.
Giants. Two giants who set the stage for every one of us who came after them. For Simcha Felder, David Greenfield, myself, Simcha Eichenstein, all of us who came after these guys, we were given a huge set of shoes to fill. The telling part about our predecessors, Noach and Dov, who are not in office, Noach didn't just leave elected office and go on and do nothing, and Dov didn't leave elective office. They're both contributing. They both stayed in part of the community and continued to contribute. And Noach went on to the bench, extremely accomplished jurist, extremely wise, extremely fair, recognized, respected member of the judiciary who had a good 10, you know, there's a mandatory retirement in New York. He had a good 10 years ahead of him that he could have remained on the bench. But I can tell you, just on his youth and his demeanor, you wouldn't have thought he only had 10 years left. He could, you know, I never imagined a world where Noach Dier wouldn't be part of our communal fabric. Bumped into him all the time. We spoke frequently, you know. He would call me up. I would call him up. I would ask him about something, or he would more frequently call me up and tell me what I should be doing, which is okay. I'm the fourth person to hold the seat, so I had three people who were before me who got to tell me what to do. You know, unlike my predecessor, David Greenfield, he only had two people who could tell him what to do, and Simcha Felder only had one. So, you know, I had Noach, Simcha, David, you know, well, one day there'll be somebody after me and maybe they'll take my phone calls and I'll get to say something to them. But in seriousness, it is heart-wrenching. It is ripped at the fabric of our community. And that's what I talk about when I mentioned my cousin earlier, a respected doctor. The Novominskereb, Reb Dovidalevsky, the Rasegan, I can't even mention every single person. The number, I spoke about this on the floor, our virtual floor of the council last week. At our stated meeting, the number of Holocaust survivors who the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, couldn't get, but this disease did. People who I touched, numbers on their arms. I have a picture of a person in Borough Park who I remember when I used to see him. I would ask him for a bracha all the time. He's just such a wonderful. These are wonderful people that have been ripped from us by a magefa that is not defeated yet. We have to be serious about this. You know how Noach Dier didn't get it because he was sitting in a bar listening to the mayor's instructions and having a drink? Noach Dier got it because he went to work in the courthouse.
Wow.
In a courthouse that was infested with this. He's not the only judge. There's another judge who passed away, Justice Johnny Lee Baines. There are other judges who got deathly ill. They were doing their jobs. They were performing their public service. This is real. And I urge our community in the strongest terms to pay attention to what's going on around you. Please don't be an Ivel Chochem. I had it before, so it's okay. I can't get it again. It's an article that came out today in Times of Israel, a patient who very clearly had it a month ago, per the reports of that patient, epidemiology, and got it again.
Wow.
Not everything is known yet about this disease. Not everything is known yet about its travel. Not everything. I mean, look, just remember, just 3-4 weeks ago, everybody was saying, go take the subway. No worries about it. Now, shutting the subway down for 6 hours a night to give it a deep clean. That wasn't even on a concept. I have colleagues of mine who sent a letter to the MTA a week ago saying, you know, you got to shut the subway down. It's filthy. It's disgusting. And everybody was like, haha, you're crazy. Don't shut them down. And now here we are shutting them down. We're learning every day. The governor talked about how long the disease, the germ lives on stainless steel. There are things we're learning every day. I'm begging people, please pay attention. If it's good enough for the greatest gedolim to daven b'yichidus, it's good enough for all of us to do that. It's painful. It hurts. I'm not going to lie. I look forward to Shabbos the whole weekend. My friends are gathered in the shtiebel. We have a blast. I love being there. It's the same shtiebel I davened in since I was a little kid, since I was 6 years old. I miss them. I miss being there. We all miss that. We all miss Shabbos. We miss being with our family. We miss visiting friends. We miss the Kedeshim. We miss going places and talking and going to a shir and going to this shul for Shachas and this shul for Mincha and seeing our people in various. But this is what we've been given. And so we do it. That's who we are.
Absolutely. Devastating, but that is who we are. And you are spot on. Councilman Colin Yeager of the 44th District of New York City, true community leader on the Yeshiva World podcast.
It's always great to be here. Thank you so much for having me, Yaakov.